Joel, on your way out, if you can close the door.
No,
oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. What I'd like to do today, you know, I always like to introduce, if I can, a new sefer on Chumash. I want to introduce a sefer called Haksav VeHaKabbalah. It was written about 100 and close to 150 years ago by Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. And his approach to Chumash is what we call Ein Mikra Yotzi V'dei Pshuto. He's very excited about interpreting the words of the Torah literally, and what he thinks is the Pshuto Shel Mikra. And we have a beautiful example of, I think, what he likes to do right here in Parshas Bo. So that's my first paragraph for today. The Pasuk always has some sort of problem in it, in the way it's structured. And the question is how to solve the problem. So what we're looking at is a Pasuk about kares, for eating chametz on Pesach. You know, all the laws of Pesach are incorporated into Parshas Bo. So if you open up to page 152, if you have the big blue chumashim, I don't know exactly where it is in the English translation. If somebody finds it, let me know. So the pasuk we're looking at is Perek Yud Beis, and we're looking at Pasuk Tesvav. It's actually, I'm sorry, on page 153, on the left side of your page.
That's page 352.
Okay, in the English it's on page 352. All right. So what you're going to notice here about Pasuk Tesvav is that it starts with Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu. And it's going to talk later on in the end of the Pasuk about someone who eats chametz. Okay? Now in the middle, wedged in between the opening line, Doc, you want to join us here? Is there an extra chumash here?
Yeah,
okay, good. So, if you open up to page 153. It says, Ach bayom harishon tashbisu si'ar mivatechem. So really, this pasuk can be broken down into four different parts. First of all, the mitzvah of eating matzah, which oddly enough, the Torah says, how many days do you have to eat matzah?
Seven.
Okay, that itself is problematic, but not for us today. The second part of the pasuk deals with the mitzvah of tashbisu, of destroying chametz. The third part of the pasuk deals with the isra achilas chametz. And then the Torah in the fourth part concludes with the punishment for eating chametz on Pesach, which is called v'nichrasa nefesh ahimi Yisrael. So you can really break down this pasuk into A, B, C, and D. And then at the very end of the pasuk, it says miyom harishon ad yom hashvi, and that we're not sure exactly where that belongs here. You know, at the beginning of the pasuk, it speaks about the mitzvah of achilas matzah. It doesn't seem to make any sense that the Torah would have to repeat that mitzvah by saying Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi. On the other hand, if the subject of the end of this pasuk is the Isra Achilas Chametz, Kol Ochel Chametz V'Nichrasa, so then the Torah is telling us some, and the question is, why would I think otherwise? But the Torah is telling us that the Isra Chametz and the Chiv Kares for one who eats chametz applies from the beginning of the Chag, from the first day of Pesach until the end of the Chag at the end of the seventh day. But in general, you know, you really have to put this pasuk together. You know, you have to put the pieces of the puzzle together, because when you have a pasuk that has kares in it, you begin to think that the chiyuv kares should be related to everything that's written in this pasuk. As we said before, there are many things in this pasuk. There's the mitzvah of achilas matzah, there's the mitzvah of destroying the chametz, and then there's Yisrael achilas chametz. I mean, where do we put the v'nichrasa nefesh? Does it belong to the entire pasuk? I mean, is as if to say, if somebody doesn't eat matzah on Pesach, he gets kares. So the Ramban deals with this issue, and the Ramban says that you have to rewrite the pasuk. Now, when I say rewrite, I'm going to, in just a minute, if you'll bear with me, I'm going to give you a phrase which the Ramban uses very often in his commentary on the Torah, but I just want to hold that off for one more minute. And the Ramban says the following. Read the pasuk like this again. Keep a finger on the pasuk as I read it to you, the way the Ramban reads it to you. He writes, Ki chol ochel chametz. And then he says, Miyom Rishon Ad Yom Shvi is V'nichrasa Nefesh Ahi Miyisrael. Meaning, the Ramban wants to take the last phrase in the pasuk, Miyom Rishon Ad Yom Shvi, and he wants to push it up forward, push it earlier in the pasuk, in a way that it describes the extent to which a person who violates the Yisra Achila incurs a Chiyuv Kare. So what he does is, he says, read the pasuk, Kichal Ochel Chametz, and then stop. Take a deep breath, and between the words, Kichal Ochel Chametz, and V'nichrasa Nefesh, are you familiar, maybe this is only in America, do you use the word carrot? No, there's no such word. Okay. In America, if you want to indicate that words were left out accidentally, you put a carrot. I don't know again why the word carrot.
Like a brackets?
Not brackets. It's a little triangle. Like the half. It's like two-thirds of a triangle.
Parentheses?
No, it's again, it just looks like this. Parentheses are round. You know, this looks like a teepee. You know what I'm saying? An insert. Okay? So what you call David an insert, which, where's that, in South Africa?
Australia,
excuse me. In Australia, in America, it's called a carrot. I don't know how that phrasing. So anyway, the Ramban really puts a carrot here, or an insert here, and he says, you read it like this, Ki chol ochel chametz, mi yom harishon ad yom hashvi, v'nichrasa nefesh ha'im Yisrael. Okay. Now, when you take words from a pasuk and lift them like with a crane and place them elsewhere in the pasuk, okay, which the Ramban does quite often, that's called sirus ha-pasuk. Okay, again, if you had a piece of paper, you'd write this down. Lisarsehu, sirus, samach yud, samach vav resh. Samach yud, resh vav sam, sorry, sirus. Now, the word sirus in medicine, in Hebrew medicine, means a certain kind of surgery where they take parts out of your body. You know what I'm saying? It's not a very pleasant kind of idea. In any event, as I told you at the outset of today's discussion, there's a sefer called the Ksav V'Kabbalah, and he is allergic to this concept called sarsehu, to, you know, move things around in a pasuk. Okay? Again, as I said before, he's absolutely committed to pshuto shel mikra, but he'd like to maintain the integrity of the pasuk without having to take parts of the pasuk and rejuggle them. So he wants to avoid what we call sarsehu. So I'm just giving you a clue. If you ever go into a Sfarim store, you may want to buy a sefer called Haksava Kabbalah. And if you have that sefer on your shelf, I'll tell you exactly when you should take it off the shelf and read it. Whenever you see Rashi or the Ramban or any of the commentaries on Chumash writing Sarsehu, you know, rewrite the Pasuk, and take something out of the end of the pasuk and shove it into the middle of the pasuk or the beginning of the pasuk, take out the Ksav Kabbalah. And I guarantee you that he will reinterpret the pasuk in such a way that you don't have to use Sarsay. Now, before I show you what the Ksav Kabbalah is going to do with our pasuk here in Parshas Bo, I'd like you to fast forward. I want to show you another example and see if we can compare and contrast. In Parshas Mishpatim. Okay then? So open up to Perikov Beis, Pasuk Gimel. Okay, now this is the case. It's on page 182 if you have the blue Chumashim. I don't know where it is in the English Chumashim. Do you have it, Jeremy, there? Yeah, maybe. What page is it?
426.
And the Pasuk itself deals with a case where somebody stole an animal, and who knows what the punishment is when you get caught for stealing something. Kefal, you pay twice the amount. So the Pasuk says, "Imotze timotze biyado agneva." Okay, and then it says, "Shnayim." Again, I'm deliberately fast forwarding, skipping part of the Pasuk. It says, "Shnayim yishalim." Shnayim yishalim means he has to pay double. Now, somehow, in the middle of this Pasuk, the Torah inserts mishar ad chamor ad se chayim. Now, Chazal tell us that the word chayim means that the ganav, even if the animal dies while it's in his possession, has to pay for a live animal. Notice, when he pays kefal is 200% of what? And you could learn it as 200% of the dead animal, because that's what he has now in his possession, or 200% of the live animal, which is the animal that, in that state, he stole it. And that's what Chazal derived in Masechta Bava Kamma from this word chayim, that you pay twice the live animal. And the Ramban says again, sarseu, you have to sort of chop up this pasuk, and you have to insert the shnayim yishalem to the beginning of the pasuk, im hi motzei timotze biyodo agneva, is shnayim yishalem. Rashi goes a step further, and he says that the word chayim, together with shnayim yishalim, has to be inserted at the beginning of the pasuk. So the way Rashi will read this pasuk is, im imotze timotze biyodo agneva, chayim shnayim yishalim. The live animals times two he should pay, mishar ad chamor ad set. And Chazal in the Torah Shebaal Peh will derive from each one of these types of animals different halachas in hilchas geneva. So as I said, what do you do when you see the Mefarshim rearranging the Pasuk and cutting out a piece in the middle of the Pasuk and putting it at the end of the Pasuk or vice versa? Sarsei, what do you do in such a case? You open up a sefer called the Ksav V'Kabbalah. Okay, I'm just trying to introduce, I like to use this class to introduce new svar. So the Ksav Kabbalah has no problem with the way Chazal learned the Pasuk Chayim, and the word Chayim means that it's got to be the value of a live ox rather than a dead ox, the carcass. But he still wants to square Chazal with the Pshuto Shel Mikra, with the straightforward pshat in the Pasuk. So what move, if I could use that word, that's I'm borrowing from basketball, you know. What move does the Ksav V'Kabbalah make consistently, over and over again, throughout his Perush Al Torah, in order to avoid Sirus HaMikra? And he introduces a term called a Maimar HaMuzgar. Okay, and this Yechiel touches on what you said before. Muzgar, which we call sagrayim, means a parenthetical insert. Meaning, we're not going to cut things out of the pasuk and rearrange the pasuk. That's a taboo. You know, that's something that's antithetical to the Ksav HaKabbalah. But what we are going to do is we're going to allow the pasuk to describe something and then take a little bit of a break and go into detail to answer a certain question about that something, and then go back to its original subject. So what is the Ksav V'Kabbalah going to do consistently throughout the Torah? So let me give you one example, which I think is a prime example, a very simple example. Open up to Shmos Lamed Aleph. This is Parashas Kitisa. And then we'll come back to our psukim. Pasuk Yud Ches. Now this is on page 212 in the Chumash, the blue Chumash. It says, Vayitein El Moshe. Now, the subject of this pasuk, the theme of this pasuk, is that at some point in time, Hashem gives Moshe what's called Luchos Ha'edus. Right? Luchos Ha'edus, how do you translate that into English? The tablets? Is that what they call it? The two tablets, okay. But take a look at the pasuk. The pasuk says, Vayitein El Moshe, Kechaloso Lidaber Ito Behar Sinai, Shnei Luchos Ha'edus. So the Ksava Kabbalah says the following, that the interpretation of this pasuk al pipshuto shel mikra is that we don't take the phrase kechaloso ledaber ito bar Sinai, take it out and be misaris it and put it at the end of the pasuk. That's not what we do, but rather we call it a maimar hamuzgar, meaning vayiten el Moshe. The pasuk says that God gave something to Moshe. Stop. At this point, the pasuk wants to address the following question. Well, this gift that Hashem is about to give Moshe, at what point in time does Hashem grant this gift? That's the Maimar HaMuzgar. That's the question, the side question, which the Torah wants to respond to in the middle of this pasuk. And therefore we read it, Kechaloso Lidaber Ito Bar Sinai. After Hashem, over 40 day period of time, described here in the Psukim in Kitisa, transmits to Moshe what we call the Torah Shebal Peh, right? Because Moshe learned everything from Hashem during that 40 day period. Now, Luchos Ha'edus. Now, Hashem grants Moshe Rabbeinu the Luchos Ha'edus. So again, are you getting the feel for what the Ksav HaKabbalah wants to do? He wants to suggest that sometimes the Pasuk stops midway, and in order to qualify and answer a question about the beginning of the pasuk, the Torah adds a phrase, and then you read the beginning of the pasuk together with the end of the pasuk as one flow. And this, according to the Ksav HaKabbalah, is what we call Pshuto Shel Mikra. So again, just to summarize, according to the Ksav HaKabbalah, a Siris HaMikra, in which we sort of juggle, you know. Do you remember that game called, yeah, but what's it called? There's some word before Scrabble. What's it called? It's at the tip of my tongue. No, a word that comes before the word Scrabble. In my day, when I was a child, Scrabble meant that you put the pieces on the desk. Yes. Now they have a different kind of Scrabble where you get the pieces with the letters on it in a little kli, in a little utensil or something. Boggle? Yeah. Called boggle? Oh, they didn't even call it boggle Scrabble? Anyway, there's another word that comes before the word Scrabble. So again, the Ksav HaKabbalah doesn't like boggle. He is the opponent to boggle. He's the anti-boggle. He doesn't like rewriting and rearranging the words in a pasuk. That he doesn't tolerate. Instead, he uses a different methodology, which he claims is Pshuto Shel Mikra, called the Maimar HaMuzgar, which means that, as we said before, the Torah is going to ask, okay, Vayiten El Moshe, at what point in time? You know, give me some historical context to understand when this gift is being bestowed upon Moshe. The answer is, Kechaloso Ledaber Ito B'Har Sinai. And then, what did he give him? He gave him Shnei Luchos HaBrus. Luchos HaEdus. Okay. There are many, many other examples that I have, but I just want to get back to Parshas Mishpatim. Again, let's go back to the case in Perek Chav Beis, Pasuk Gimel. So what does it say? It says, Im hi motze ti motze biyodo hagneva, mishar ad chamor ad sechayim. Okay. What page did we say that was on? 180? 182? Okay, good. Thanks. That'll save me a second here. Every second counts. Okay. So the Ksav HaKabbalah says the following. Notice, he says, that after the word Chaim, does anybody know what's the sign, the Tamei HaMikra? Are you familiar with Tamei HaMikra? So what's the Tamei HaMikra after Chaim? What's that called? After the word Chaim. Asnachta, right? Or under Chaim, right? It means, he says that the word Chaim cannot be connected to Shnayim Yishalim. There's no way that you can accept Rashi that in Pshuto Shel Mikra you read it Chaim Shnayim Yishalim. Two times a live animal you shall pay, because the word Chaim belongs to the previous part of the pasuk. And therefore he says the following. We have to apply the principle of Maimar HaMuzgar here. And the Torah is going to say the following: If imatze timatze biyado agneva, if you find the gneva in the hands of the ganav, okay. And it says the following. Second. Now, the Torah is going to tell you that in such a case, again, we're going to see the Maimar HaMuzgar in just a second, that he pays Shnayim Yishalim. Notice the Chiddush of this pasuk is that when we find the Gnev in the hands of the Ganov, he's got to pay Kefal. That's called Shnayim Yishalim. The Torah adds a Maimar HaMuzgar, a parenthetical insert, if you will, in order to tell you what is the Shnayim Yishalim? You're going to tell me that the Ganav, we found him red-handed, right? We found the Ganav in his hands, and he's going to have to pay double. But tell me something. Double of what? And here the Torah takes a little bit of a break to answer the question, double of what? And the answer is, double of Shar Chamar V'Yadseh Chaim. The word Chaim here describes the object that was stolen. Even though now it may be dead, but the Torah says, as far as we're concerned, in terms of imposing a penalty, a punishment upon the Ganav, Shnayim Yishalim, we want to know, well, what is the object that he stole? And that object would be doubling and multiplying it by two. And the answer is, it's going to be either Shar, a Chamor, a Sech Chaim, a lot. That's called Maimar HaMuzgar. Okay then? Now let's see if we can go back to our pasuk in Parshas Bo on page 153, and let's see if we can apply the principle of Maimar HaMuzgar. And he says the following. I'm going to read to you the language of the Ksav HaKabbal. Ki chol ochel Chometz v'nikrasa hanefesh ahi Ola al hamaymar shivas yomim matzos tochelu. He says the following. Remember that we divided this pasuk into four parts. So he says, you read it the following. This part, we'll call it Aleph Bet. And then again, Aleph Bet. So basically the second half of the pasuk parallels the first half of the pasuk. So you read it like this. He says that connect Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu with Ki Kol HaOchel Chometz V'Nichrasa HaNefesh Ahi, and then connect Ach Bayom HaRishon Tashbisu Mibateichem with Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi. So it works like this. Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu. Why should you be eating matzah for 7 days? And the answer is in the last part of the pasuk, which parallels the first part of the pasuk. Ki Kol Ochel Chometz V'Nichrasa HaNefesh Ahi MiYisrael. Because since you are enjoined from eating chametz, therefore, Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu. Now, we have a Maimar HaMuzgar. And we go back to the beginning of the pasuk, and it says, "Ach bayom arishon tashbisu si'or mibateichem." And the Torah is telling you that you have to destroy the chametz from the beginning of the pasuk to guarantee that you don't have any chametz in your possession miyom arishon ad yom hashvi. So you follow the pattern here is aleph bet, in which the second half of the pasuk is a parallel or reflected image, a mirror image of the first part of the pasuk. So therefore, shivas yom matz tochelo is going to be explained by kikola ochel chametz v'nichrisa nefesh. And then if you ask me, well, okay, I have to eat matzah for 7 days, what else? The Torah says, make sure that you destroy all your chametz. And the Torah then tells you at the end that chametz, your house has to be chametz free for the entire period of 7 days of Pesach. Comes along the Ksava Kabbalah and he says, if you read it that way, then there's going to be a nafgimina halacha lemaisa. And that is, there's a famous Noda B'Yehuda, and he wants to know whether or not you violate Bal Yeira and Bal Yematze and you get Malkus for it. Now, again, I'm going off on a tangent here, but I think this is fascinating if you follow me. There's a principle in Malkus that you don't get Malkus for something called a lav hanitak li essay, which means if the Torah tells you that if you violate a lav, you have to fulfill an essay to rectify what you did, then you don't get Malkus. There's no punishment of Malkus. And the question is, if a person owns chametz, if he has chametz in his possession, is that called a lav hanitak liese? And the Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Tzadi Hei comes to the conclusion that Bal Yira Bal Yimotze is a lav hanitak liese because it's connected to the mitzvah of Tashbisu. Now the question that I want to ask you is, the mitzvah of Tashbisu to destroy the chametz only applies before we get into Pesach, right? As the introduction, what we call Yidal B'Nisan. So why is it a lav anita glase when Bal Yira B'Yimotze applies during the 7 days of Pesach? Says the Ksav Kabbalah, now I have the answer to this riddle. Because the Torah says, at the end of this Pasuk, Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi, right? Which is the second bet, if you know what I mean. That goes back to the beginning bet, which was Ach B'Yom HaRishon Tashbisu Se'or Mivatecha. And therefore, what the Torah is telling you by adding the words "miyom arishon ad yom hashvi" is that the mitzvah of tashbisu applies during the entire Pesach. So obviously, you have to get rid of your chametz before Pesach. But let's say chametz comes into your possession, or you missed certain chametz, right? During the 7 days, the answer is even during the 7 days, you have a mitzvah of tashbisu. And the only reason that you could say that is because you break up this pasuk into aleph bet. Okay, I just want to give you one more example. Let's open up to Shmos Chavhei Pasuk Vav.
How else would you have read it then? What was the other halacha l'maasa? What's the other way of reading halacha l'maasa on this?
The other way of reading it is that the mitzvah of Tashbisu only applies by Yom HaRishon and not during the balance of the Chag. And then Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi somehow goes on to Ochel Chametz. It's a reference. So again, before the Ksav Kabbalah, and this is the way the other Mefarshim learn it, they interpret B'Yom HaRishon Yom HaShvi is not related to Tashbisu, but rather it's a description of Achilas Chametz. And the Torah is now telling you, again out of order, out of sequence, that Kol HaOchel Chametz, and then you have to read it, which is called Sarseu, Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi V'Nichras HaNefesh Ahi. He's saying, no, let's leave the Pasuk intact as is. Just that the Torah gives you Aleph and Bet. First of all, the mitzvah of Matzah. Then it goes on to the mitzvah of Tashbisu. Now the Torah comes back to Ochel Chametz and tells you Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi. If we learn now that the second half of the Pasuk is a reflection on the first half of the Pasuk, then Kikol Ochel Chametz V'Nichrasa is a description of, or an answer to the question, Shivas Yom and Matzos Tochelu. And in the last part of this pasuk, Miyom HaRishon Ad Yom HaShvi, is a description of So we have a perfect parallel structure between the first half of the pasuk and the second half of the pasuk, and that he says maintains the integrity of the pasuk without having to juggle and scramble things around. I want to show you one more example of this.
The English, but we imagine that the English translated the way we shouldn't understand it.
Well, does anybody have the English? You want to, Jeremy, read us in English on in Shmos Yud Beis Pasuk Tesvav. I'm sure the English is going to just give it to you literally.
That's right. That's the way.
In that sequence,
that's a misunderstanding.
And that's going to be a misunderstanding, because then you're going to come to the conclusion that this whole phrase of Yom Rishon Ad Yom Shvi is out of place. And also you'll fail to recognize that the Tashbisu that's written in Beis of the first half of the Pasuk is being described as a mitzvah that extends throughout the entire Chag, the entire Pesach.
Okay. For a 7-day period, surely we eat matzahs, but on the previous day you shall nullify the leaven from your homes. For anyone who eats leavened food, that soul should be cut off from Israel from the first day to the second day.
Right, that's his job. He's just giving you the little translation.
Yeah.
So now Rabbi says, if you could fast forward to Perek Chaf Hei, which is Parashas Truma, Pasuk Vav, and the Torah says, Shekin. Pasuk Zayin, excuse me. The Torah says, Avnei Shoham, the Avnei Miluim, La Ephod Vilachoshen. So Rashi says, Avnei Shoham, La Ephod Vilachoshen. The Avnei Miluim, I'm sorry. Rashi says the following, Avnei Shoham. He says, La Ephod, and Avnei Miluim Lachoshen. This would be perhaps the source for the Ksav Kabbalah of Aleph Beis, because what Rashi is doing here is taking the two words at the end of the Pasuk, La Ephod Lachoshen, and he's saying that that forms an Aleph Beis, in which the Avnei Shoma to be placed on the Ephod, and the Avnei Miluim on the Choshen. So that's it. So again, if you ask me, what's the difference between Maimar HaMuzgar and Mikra Mesuras, and why does the Ksav HaKabbalah completely avoid Mikra Mesuras? The answer is because he feels that a Mikra Mesuras requires that you take the pasuk out of its pshuto and you reassemble or reorganize the words in the pasuk and its sequence. That's called a Maimar HaMesuras, and that's Mikra HaMesuras, that's what he wants to avoid. On the other hand, if you have a Maimar HaMuzgar, that's a way of trying to maintain the integrity of the Pasuk.
Excuse me, Rabbi.
Go ahead. All right. Rabosa, you know, I like to add a little bit of something inspirational on the Parsha. So I want to share with you something from my father's Zichrono Livracha. You know, I always like to introduce new svarim in this class. So I have here a collection of my father's essays on the Torah, which is called Good Beginnings. It was actually published in 1962. How many years ago is that? 54 years ago. Wow. And This volume is very precious to me because my father wrote me an inscription here. In any event, so he says the following. He says that before Yetzias Mitzrayim, we had the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And the Gemara in Masechta Zvachim, in the fifth parak, tells us, Chazal tell us, that there's something very unique about the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And that's based on the pasuk that we have in Parshas Bo called Sel Beis Ovo Sel Abayis, which means that it's not that you and I, each of us individually, will eat from the Korban Pesach, but rather we form what's called a chabura, it's called a group, and one family forms a chabura, sometimes many families form a chabura, they purchase a seh, a lamb, I guess you'd call it, for the paschal offering, for the Korban Pesach, And the law is, the Mishnah establishes in Zvachim, that if a person was not manui on this chabura, in other words, he was left hanging and he never joined together with another unit of a chabura, he did not enroll, then he's barred from joining a group later on. He's got to be part of the group when they actually designate this lamb as a Karban Pesach. If they've already designated it, which means that the minhag already took place, he's unfortunately out. So my father, Zichron Levrach, wants to suggest that this concept of minui and chabura, that we should all be part of one unit, is antithetical to everything that was essential to Egyptian culture, to the hashkafah of Mitzrayim. And this, he says, is indicated in the pasuk in Parshas Bo that describes Makas Choshech. It says, "Lo ra ish es achiv," which literally translates that no one saw his brother. But Chazal understand no one saw his brother, that each one of the Egyptians was only interested in himself. You know, he was in pitch black, pitch darkness, and he tried to figure out a way of extricating himself from that darkness. But he didn't try to help anyone else. Everyone looked out only for themselves. And this pasuk, Ish es achiv, right, Lo ra ish es achiv, is indicative of the symptom of darkness, not just in Makas Choshech, but the darkness that really represents Egyptian society, the affliction of Egyptian. No man was interested in the other. He wasn't there to help him in his need of hour. He says that the philosophy of Egypt is described by the poet in the following little ditty. I had a little tea party this afternoon at 3. 'Twas very small, 3 guests in all, just I, myself, and me. Myself ate all the sandwiches, while I drank up the tea. 'Twas also I who ate the pie and passed the cake to me. He says, therefore the Karban Pesach comes to undermine and demonstrate against this selfish attitude. For a Jew to be mekayim the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, he had to join together in a community. His responsibility was towards the community, to gather a unit together and form a chabura. And he says that if you take a look at the Siddur and the Tefillos, he calls it the time-hallowed prayer book of Israel, he says you will see that over and over again, all at Tefillos are formulated in the plural. It's always Shema Yisrael b'koleinu, Shema Yisrael tefiloseinu v'bakashoseinu, techezena einenu, may our eyes see the return to Zion. It's always the emphasis on we, on ours, on, it's never I, myself, me. And he says that that really is what the Bria, the creation of Hashem, is all about. When Hashem brought about the world, everything is brought in pairs. God creates everything as pairs. Only God is one. And he says that the world of science is the same. In the inanimate world, there's a constant process of fusion. Oxygen and hydrogen are joined together to give us water. Sodium and chloride, which themselves are poisonous, when joined together, give us salt. There's certain metals that when they're fused together, we get steel or other alloys, which constitute the very fabric and the sinews of modern industry. And according to those scientists who believe in evolution, they claim that in history, there were two types of living creatures that inhabited the earth. There were the large and powerful beasts, like the dinosaurs, and they displayed a deep hatred for one another. These animals perished. But the ants and the bees and the birds who joined together to form communities are still thriving to this day. Human language came into being as a result of man's endeavor to communicate with his fellows, to escape the oppressive loneliness of life. Words were invented in order to help create a better plan for life. What is a good home, he says? It's a place where the members of the family have learned harmonious existence. They communicate the best and finest within them. They speak not in terms of I, me, and mine, but we, our, and ours. And he concludes his presentation by telling of a legend of a great man who was conducted, after he died, onto a tour of the other world. And after seeing Gan Eden, they took him to Gehenna. And he was very surprised to find that people in Gehenna were sitting around a very colorful, beautiful banquet table that was filled with appetizing food, appealing to the eye and to the palate. But then he noticed on their faces that they looked starved and emaciated. Why is that so? He says that large spoons were tied to their hands, and no one could manage to get even a morsel of food into his mouth. When he was taken to heaven, he saw the same arrangement, but there people were seated at banquet tables, long spoons tied to the hand. They looked very well fed and happy. And the man turned to the Malach and he asked him, why do people here look so good? And the Malach responded, here, my friend, people have learned to feed one another. That's why it's a heavenly place. He says, this is my plea. He says, I wish that people become more conscious of the principles of the Korban Pesach, that happiness and success is a result of cooperation. Peace is the product of a true we spirit in society, and then life would be really like Gan Eden for all of us. And he concludes by telling that the state of Maine, which is in New England in the United States, is known to be a very cold state, you know, because they suffer from very harsh winters. And there was a man who, despite the coldness of Maine, would regularly attend Shabbos services in his Beis HaKnesses. And all of a sudden, nobody saw him. He stopped coming. And the Rav of the Shul inquired about him, and he found out that the man was well, but he stopped coming to Shul. So one evening he went to visit the man, and he found this member of the Shul seated comfortably at a fireplace reading a book. The fire was warm, and the rabbi sat down near his host. He then took a live piece of coal, and he picked it up with tongs and set it at the corner of the fireplace. While the rest of the fire was warm and glowing, the isolated piece of coal grew paler by the minute until it was cold and dead. The rabbi said nothing. He arose, he bade his neighbor good night, and he went home. And next Shabbos, the man returned to the Beis HaKnesses. He had gotten the message. May we too see the need for cooperation, for helpfulness. The spirit of the Korban Pesach should bring us closer to one another and to our Kodesh Baruch. That's what I wanted to share that with you. So that's, again, just what we got out of the parasha today was a little bit of Ksav Kabbalah, and to try to reinterpret psukim that are closer to Pshuta Shel Mikra, and also a little bit of a drasha here from my father's Zichrono Livracha, Shehei Sfas of Dovros Bekev. The pasuk says, just to complete, in Perek Yud Beis pasuk Lamed Hey, Uvnei Yisrael Asu Kidvar Moshe Vayishalu Mimitzayim Klei Chesef Uklei Zav Usmalot. And the emphasis here is on Asu Kidvar Moshe. Generally speaking, the Torah doesn't tell us that Klal Yisrael fulfilled the words or the request of Moshe. It should have said Asu, not Kidvar Moshe, but Kidvar Hashem. And the Tzivui of Hashem comes earlier in Perek Yud Aleph of this parsha, Psukim Aleph of Days, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Daberna the Ozneam, the Ishalu Ish Meesrehu, the Isha Meesrehu saw, Kli Kesef, Kli saw. So, what's this Asu Kidvar Moshe? What's the meaning of Asu Kidvar Moshe rather than Asu Kasher Tziva Hashem Lemoshe? Completely avoiding the Tzivui of Hashem. And if you go back to last week's parasha in Perek Ches, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Vayas Hashem Kidvar Moshe, Vayosar Ha'orev Miparo. There it says Kidvar Moshe, because there Hashem is responding to the Bakosha of Moshe, to the Ratzon of Moshe. And it makes sense that Dvar Moshe, as opposed to Tzivui, means his request, his desire, but not an absolute imperative or command. So I want to share with you the insight of Rav Breida. I like to quote to some Derech. And he writes that in the Tzivui itself, that's in Perek Yud Aleph, it says, Hashem says to Moshe, Daber no bi ozne ha'am. That phrase, Daber no bi ozne ha'am, is very unusual. Well, what's ba ozne ha'am? I mean, every other Tzivui that Hashem gives Moshe is not bi ozne ha'am. They just pass on to the people. Daber el b'nei Yisro v'marat aleihem. It doesn't say bi ozne ha'am. But rather, the meaning of bi'ozne ha'am is galei datcha, that you, Moshe, should reveal your wisdom, your intelligence, your understanding. She'tov yasu im yishalu ish meisrei v'isha meisrei. That it's a good idea. I need you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, to speak to the people and express your understanding of why it's a good thing to borrow the clay kess of clay zov. We don't know the answer to that question, but and that's what the pasuk means, be ozne ha'am, that you should speak to the people in a way that it'll enter into their ears, meaning where they'll accept it. It'll be something that makes sense to them, that they'll want to do. In a sense, you're persuading and convincing them to borrow these kalim. And even in the language of the pasuk, daber na bi ozne ha'am, it says v'yishalu. It doesn't say b'loshen tzivui sha'alu. Sha'alu would be loshen tzivui, but rather v'yishalu, and they shall borrow. Meaning that ultimately Moshe is going to have to convince them that they, on their own, with their own motivation, should be interested in this mitzvah of borrowing. And if that be the case, let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says here on our pasuk, Uvnei Yisrael asu kidvar Moshe sha'amalem b'mitzrayim v'yishalu ish me'esrei. We want to know why Rashi has to add the word b'mitzrayim and emphasize the fact that that back in Mitzrayim they got this request. And the answer is perhaps that the lashon of Mitzrayim here is being emphasized to indicate that Moshe back in Mitzrayim had already convinced them that this was a worthwhile endeavor, that they should be motivated and desire to go through with it and borrow these kalim. Now, let's just ask why borrow the kalim, and let's emphasize the Arachayim HaKadosh, who asks a similar question. Instead of borrowing kalim and then actually keeping them, we find something similar that also is tamuah, that Klal Yisrael say, let's go and worship for 3 days, Nelcha, Derech Shloshes Yom Amidba V'Nizbacha L'Hashem Elokeinu. This is a kind of hitchakmut, in other words. They're sort of misleading the mitzvah into thinking they're going for 3 days and coming back. And says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, this is all part of what we call Mida Keneged Mida. And he based himself on Tanchuma, that the Mitzrim also tried to pull a fast one and fool the people of Israel. Nischakmu, Havan Nischakmalo, the Pasuk says. They tried to be Mishabe, the people, first Beperach, and then Beperach. Perach means they started by trying to win them over and say, don't you want to participate in building Egyptian society, make your contribution. And later on, they converted it into actual slavery. They weren't initially enslaved. It was perach. It was a soft kind of persuasion. And here too, mida keneged mida, the people we're asking Mitzrayim Perach Nelcha Gimel Yamin, or Hashiluni Kaspechem Simlosechem, etc. But the Achakach Perach, and the Orchaim goes into great detail. So the Tzimui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have to come through Moshe speaking the Ozne Ha'am, and the goal is Shiyasu Me'atzma V'yishlo Me'amitzrim Kli Kesef Kli Zav. And why? Because the Torah doesn't want to command us to do something that's not 100% honest. The Ramban back in Brachos Mem Ches has a long discussion about Yaakov Avinu and his mid of Emes, and as long as he was together with Lavan, he had to revert, he had to use Derech Psaltol, employing the same kind of method as Lavan to trick Yaakov. And here also, even though Yaakov did everything correctly, but he had to resort to this kind of a method, despite the fact that Chosom Hashal HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes. And therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe and Aaron to tell Paro Melchon No Shloshes Yomim, this was Emes Lamito. Because the truth is that they never said to the Mitzrayim, to Paro, that after the 3 days they're coming back to Mitzrayim. And that's okay. That's a tzivui that can be accepted. But in this case, Sheyishalu Me'amitzrim Klei Kesef Klei Zav, that's a little bit different. That's an explicit command that is going to exploit the Mitzrayim by telling them we're only borrowing Kalim, and it's really not true. They weren't just borrowing Kalim. And therefore, perhaps there couldn't be an explicit tzivui from Hashem. It's got to be Daber Na, the Ozne Ha'am. And Rashi on the word Na tells us, based on the Gemara Brachos, say Na El Loshim Bakosha, Bakosha Mincha, His Hira Malkach, Shelo Yomar Oso Tzadik Avram, The Avdum, The Inu Osam Kiyim Bahem, The Achkach Yetzu B'chushkar Lo Kiyim Bahem. And the language of Bakosha here that Rashi uses, based on the Gemara Brachos, as we said, Ein No El Loshim Bakosha, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being Mavakish. And that's a pella, but the answer is the way we explained it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want to give an explicit tzivui that they should borrow Kalim from Mitzrayim. Therefore, he needed to be mavakesh that Moshe should be medaber biozni ha'am to motivate them to fulfill this ratzon.